Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we're starting the show today by talking a little about mental health, how we can tap into the Olympic mindset. What can you and I learn from Olympians to get better at the things we do and like to do? Well, we've got an expert to share what she knows with us, Dr. Shyla Mergane, back with us once again. Dr. Mergane, a distinguished psychologist at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and she's also a sports psychologist, works with the UW Badgers student athletes. So lots of experience, and it's great to have her back, and I hope you'll join in the conversation as we move along today. What experiences have you had or questions do you have? Maybe getting a little better at the things you do. Give a call, the number 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. Dr. Shyla Mergane, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
And you're in Belize.
I am off the grid on a tiny 1-mile by 5-mile island escaping Wisconsin winter, but fortunately there's good Wi-Fi so we can have this conversation.
I'm really glad for that, because here we are, the 2026 Olympics they're underway in Italy. What inspires you about the world-class athletes who are now competing for medals?
There is so much excitement and awe just witnessing the potential and possibility of what human beings can accomplish. And for me as a psychologist, certainly athletes get far in physical ability alone, but really what separates those who get gold is that they have a strong mind and they actually practice training their mind. As always, I'm interested in how can we non-Olympians learn from that so we can, in a sense, go for gold in our own lives and whatever we're wanting to achieve.
So what strong mindset, that's what we're talking about here. How, what do you mean by a strong mindset? Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And I think of whether maybe at work you're needing to give a presentation, or maybe you're working on a hobby or skill that you want to excel at, or even a parent teaching their children or a grandparent wanting to instill a strong mindset in their grandchildren. There's so much to learn from Olympians. So I think one of the key things that can be a takeaway from people is Olympians learn to manage the chatter in their mind. Whenever we're trying to grow, we're growing outside the comfort zone, we're trying something new, it's easy for self-doubt and self-criticism to seep in. In a sense, our mind can focus on what's wrong or what we're not doing well enough. And in that, a lot of self-doubt can crop up. So Olympians learn to relate differently to those thoughts. I like to think of those negative thoughts like negative automatic thoughts, or the acronym NATS, flying around. And they recognize not every thought is true. It's just a thought. In a sense, they can say, hey, that's a thought, but they take action. And I think kind of in sum, they can really also, our place of personal power, which Olympians know, is just to focus on what do I need to do next? What's the next step? Those gnats can be flying around, but we don't need to get hooked with it. Instead, focus on what I need to do. And athletes also come up with maybe some positive thoughts that they can say. And in particular, thinking about instructional thoughts and inspirational thoughts. You can choose a different thought. Instructional, what do I need to do next? And then encouragement, what kinds of encouragement can I give myself in the moment to have that grit to stay on course and keep going?
You know, I was thinking about, as you were talking, I was thinking about my own experiences and the athletic things that I do. And there are, my mindset on playing golf, there are certain holes that I know darn well I'm going to do really well. I mean, I'm totally confident that I'm going to hit the ball to where I need to hit it. And then there are other holes where playing these same courses over and over again, where I'm going to have trouble with this. And so that mindset you know, I haven't conquered totally the positive mindset for every hole, but that's what Olympians do, I guess you're saying.
Yeah. And I think that's such a great example, Larry. We've all have experienced that we, in a sense, start to doubt ourselves before we even tee off at that hole. And that inner critic can, in a sense, be sticky or hook us and then derail our performance. And so I think a way to get around that is not trust every thought you think, not every thought is true, and get back to basics. So for example, Lair, if you were on the golf course wanting to excel on that particular course at that particular hole, you might use some visualization. And there's a powerful visualization practice that Olympians use, and it's called the flick back, flick forward. So you flick back in time to a time where you performed well. It might be on those other holes you did really well. Mm-hmm. You think about those characteristics that went into doing it. You visualize it if it's happening in real time. So in a sense, I think of that as a personal highlights reel. That times where you've just excelled, and then you flick forward, for example, in that hole, you haven't done historically well, you flick forward, bringing those same qualities to the upcoming task. And then you visualize yourself doing well at that hole you haven't previously, using some of those same techniques, mindset, abilities, skills in accomplishing that new goal. And so flick back to that past success, that highlights reel, and flick forward to what you want to see happen. And the best time to visualize is at bedtime, before you go to sleep, or early morning when you first wake up. That seems to go in to that subconscious mind to make it a new reality.
Interesting. Jim in Newport Township, Illinois has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning, and I hope I'm not commenting too far off subject. Anyway, it has to do with in previous Olympics, I haven't noticed it so much in this particular Winter Olympics. They've shown short video biographies of the athletes. And we know that on the high school level, oftentimes they're trying to go all state. Then they graduate onto the college level, and they're looking for a national ranking. But these biographies that I've seen in the past have not made any comments about their academics. And, of course, they're attending academic institutions all along the line. And so I wonder how that interplays with their actual day-to-day lives.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. Larry, do you have some thoughts? I have some thoughts about that.
I was, just at the non-Olympic level, I think it's often the fact, the school, the athletes, what the athlete does, where what their major is. Often I hear that.
Yeah, that's true, Larry. And it's so important. You know, I think of grandparents with their grandkids or parents with their kids. Sometimes people focus too much on one thing, like their sport. Only if they get injured or aren't, you know, they're benched for the season, then all of a sudden their identity crumbles and they can really drop pretty significantly in terms of self-esteem. So I think, Jim, what you're highlighting is the student athlete are the importance of being well-rounded. I think about it as a pyramid. If you have lots of things that define you, you're going to do better if one thing's taken away versus a pillar. You know, we certainly know these Olympians have sacrificed so much, but I think, Jim, you're highlighting the importance of other aspects like that, academics. There is life for these Olympic athletes after their sport ends, when they retire usually pretty young. And so I think it's encouraging, to think about just in general for us to be well-rounded individuals, even if we're really trying to excel at one particular thing.
I'm thinking about self-confidence. What does a healthy level or a healthy amount of self-confidence look like?
That's great, Larry. And I think about it from a growth mindset that, you know, we all have so much more potential than we realize. And I'm always encouraging people, and especially people raising children, to focus on the potential. And with that, if we have a bad day, if we mess up, if somebody does better than us, our self-esteem isn't rocked. because we know, yeah, it was just a day, but I have tomorrow, and maybe I haven't mastered it yet. The word yet is really fundamental to the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. People feel like I only have so much ability, and people are going to find out that maybe I'm not as good as they thought I would be. And then if you mess up, it can feel devastating because you feel like a fraud, you feel like a failure. So that growth mindset, I think, is really foundational to building confidence because, again, you're banking on what's possible versus taking too seriously what happened in a particular day.
Colleen in Cumberland sent us an email to ask, is there a connection between mental and emotional health and physical conditioning?
Absolutely. And I think, Colleen, that's why you're seeing so many Olympians really be transparent about working with a psychologist or counselor, getting mental health treatment. We've seen some high profile athletes talk about if their emotional health isn't good, they're not going to be able to perform. And I think about if you are struggling, for example, with too much anxiety, or maybe you're struggling with depression, your mind isn't going to be focused. And one of the key skills that Olympic athletes have is to be able to have laser-like focus on the task at hand and staying in the moment. And they actually train in that with mindfulness, learn how to stabilize the mind in the moment. So you're not worrying about the past or the future. And I think all of us could benefit from that to cultivate focus. And I think that's why there are people like me and others that are sports psychologists that really help athletes. I know the University of Wisconsin-Madison has prioritized that for any student athlete at any point can have access to mental health treatment for free as part of being a student. And I think you're seeing other collegiate programs doing that, and even at the high school level, and certainly at the professional level, that if we're not well, you know, we're not going to do well in our sport.
Dr. Shyla Mergain, our guest today, she is a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, works a lot with our UW-Madison Badger athletes as well, as we talk with her about the mindset and developing a healthy mindset is the better word to improve in whatever we do. And you can join in the number 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking with Dr. Shyla Mergain, distinguished psychologist at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, talking with her today about performance and mindset, and what are the Olympians' mindsets? I'm sure there's different mindsets for among them, but what makes them as good as they are and as successful as they are? And you can join in again, the number 800-642-1234. Can self-confidence get in the way? Well, let's put it this way. What are the signs your self-confidence may be greater than your ability to achieve a goal?
That's a great question, Larry. And I think about it as the stress and performance curve. If there's like no stress, if we're overly confident, then we're not going to necessarily work hard. We might be lackadaisical. We might not take it as seriously, only to fall short in what we're doing, versus maybe if we're underconfident, it's like there's too much stress and then we're going to have too many big event nerves. And as a result, that anxiety and tension in the body is really going to get in the way. So having the right amount of confidence, I think, is really important. And it goes back to, I think, two things: self-talk. So keeping the mind in the moment and having what I call a cue word that can really stabilize the mind, or could be an anchor. Like I think of a volleyball player who adjusts her hairband, or a golfer who adjusts the Velcro on his glove and reties it, or a baseball player who ties his shoelaces. And that kind of cue, or a word, like I've had athletes use word like focus or power or force, that kind of thing gets ourselves out of our head into the moment and focusing on what's next. And then I think secondly, recovering quickly from setbacks. Our figure skaters are great examples. You see them fall in the middle of the performance, only have to get back up with a smile on their face and focus on the next jump that they have to do. And I think that type of training, how to bounce back after a setback, I think is really important with confidence as well.
And you build it by repetition, how do you build it?
Yeah, I think a couple things. One, through effort, right? We're not going to excel overnight, and to tolerate some of those missteps along the way. So remembering that confidence is built, success is built through experience, through hard work, through effort. And when things don't go well, not taking it so seriously, but looking at it as a learning opportunity. I also think having support people along the way. The Olympians have coaches, they have teammates, they have friends and family cheering them on, that having building that support base for yourself to encourage you if you find that confidence lacking, who helps pick you up when you struggle, and who can be that cheering squad for you to keep going.
You know, yesterday I watched I'm a curling fan, so I watched the mixed doubles yesterday, and Corey Tice and Corey Dropkin were in the semifinals, and it got down to the last shot. Corey Tice, a gal from Duluth, Minnesota, had to slide that 42-pound rock 140 feet down the ice and curl it around with the help of her partner, of course, but curl it around another rock and then hit the rock kind of on the edge of the competitor, knock it out of play, and keep that other rock. You just barely touch it enough to knock it out and keep her own rock in play. And if she could do that, they win. And if she couldn't, it would go to another set and the other team would have overtime, basically, would have the advantage. So she had to make that shot basically to win, and she did it. And talk about performance under stress.
Oh my goodness, Larry, what a great example, right? And to watch that, and shout out to our Wisconsin curling community. I bet a lot of Wisconsinites, they were watching that match. And right, you're talking about what's possible, right? And in a sense, threading the needle, I think, in that. Or I think about that eye in the hurricane, that is quite quiet and calm. And so that, in that moment, she was able to really dig deep, it sounds like, stay calm, execute something probably she's practiced before, and believe in herself too. Just really heroic, inspiring performance there. And so thinking about that constructive, positive talk, looking to what might be possible, and then practicing for that moment when maybe we need to execute something in that way.
She didn't look under stress at all. I was under stress. I can tell you that.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh man, the watching that rock go all the way down and perfectly executed to win that. In fact, I think they're playing right now for the championship, for the gold.
We should all tune in. Sounds like Larry.
But that role of, I guess, positive thinking too. I mean, you got to believe you can do it. I can do this.
Absolutely. And I think what you're highlighting, Larry, we have this mental chatter going on in the background. So many of us aren't even aware of what we're saying to ourselves throughout the day. And I think what you're highlighting is we should all listen to what we're saying to ourselves throughout the day. And especially when we're trying to accomplish something during a performance or a work meeting and paying attention when those negative thoughts pop up and correcting them by consciously thinking more positive thoughts, whether it's encouragement or just instructional thoughts. And in that moment, you probably had to say, hey, I can do this, but also think through technique wise of where she needed to execute. And over time, and I think this is a big thing we know from neuroscience, over time, interrupting those negative thoughts and replacing them with more constructive ones will have a real effect on our performance and overall outlook.
And I think, you know, she was probably in some kind of zone. We, you know, we talk about, you hear this athletes say, oh, I was in the zone. What can you do to reproduce that experience? I mean, I hear this a lot from many different kinds of athletes. So I was in
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see athletes prior to competition doing slower, lower breathing or listening to music to regulate physiologically. If you're too keyed up or too sluggish, you're not going to perform well. And athletes know the right physiological and emotional state, and they train in accessing it so they can turn it on like a light switch. And we can all do that. Larry, for almost any athlete that I work with, I encourage them to do a 4-6 breath count, doing diaphragmatic breathing or belly breathing. So breathing in for 4 and then out for 6. And doing that, I call it the power 10 breath. So doing that for 10 breaths. So again, you're breathing in for 4. Your stomach's going out like a balloon filling with air. As you breathe out, you're breathing out for 6. And that stomach like a balloon is deflating, and doing that for 10 breaths. That 4-6 breath count for at least 10 breaths really seems to be helpful in regulating physiologically. And then I'm always encouraging my athletes to practice more of that breathing, you know, up to 20 minutes a day over time can really make a difference. Wow. And it's helpful for lowering blood pressure and lowering anxiety too, and helps with sleep. So there are physical benefits too, just for our overall health.
As you were talking, I did it twice.
I can only get two.
Great,
Larry.
I can only get two.
Even 2 breaths can be helpful. Yeah. And that's just as helpful whether we're going into a presentation or a tough conversation or waiting in the doctor's waiting area. You know, that kind of breathing really balances our stress response and creates more equilibrium in our system.
Amy from Milwaukee wonders is mindfulness training useful when a person is applying or maybe has gotten a new job?
Absolutely. I think that can be one of the most tiring things if you're starting a new job the first 6 months, or it can be one of the most anxiety provoking situations in life if we're out of work trying to find new work. I think about using mindfulness in a job interview, just really staying present and also in touch with our qualities. It can help us just manage stress of starting a new job, or it can even provide some motivation just in applying for a job. So something simple like using your breath and just spending even 5 minutes of just noticing the breath as you're breathing in and out, and using the breath as an anchor to focus on. Or you could do a 5 senses practice. For example, when you're walking, noticing 5 things you see, 4 things you hear, 3 things you can touch, 2 things you smell, 1 thing you taste. Again, that gets us out of our head into the moment. So we're connected with more of life. And I think also more of us shows up when we're just here now in the moment, present.
Yeah. Thinking in terms of long-term versus short-term. Here I'm thinking about the when I've been in an interviewing mode where you're 3 or 4 people interviewing somebody for a position, often the question comes up, where do you want to be 4 years from now or 5 years from now? And for a lot of Olympians, it's kind of the same because the Olympics only happen every 4 years. So there's long-term goals for them, but there's also often long-term goals for us.
Yes, Larry.
So it's important to have long-term as well as short-term.
Absolutely. I think it's really enlivening. And part of how we have vitality in our life is by building meaning and purpose. And I think Olympians, you know, they're working for a 4-year goal, if not longer. Maybe they've been doing this sport since childhood. And I think that can be really inspiring to think about not just what I want to do this year, but start setting and working towards long-term goals and really incorporating some of these mental skills we've been working on. And I think that can help us really chart our course. I think about it as steering by starlight, that 4-year goal that allows us to stay on track with our career, our life, our family, what's important, but also to allow us to experience and achieve more of what we want for ourselves. So yeah. I encourage people to set maybe 4-year goals for the next Winter Olympics, or even 2 for the Summer Olympics.
And what happens, I'm thinking there's only one winner oftentimes, and sometimes in your job, things happen, your results are disappointing, didn't turn out the way you wanted. What strategies are there to recovering from that, maybe a loss or setback?
Mm-hmm. I think two, number one, right, there's only one gold, right? And we forget that for Olympians, every moment is part of being in the Olympics, walking out in that opening ceremony, flying over to Italy. And sometimes we get so focused on the outcome, I need to win, I need to achieve, that we forget that sometimes the whole experience is part of it. And second, sometimes we learn more from failure than achievement. And there's something called, you know, growth from that, that difficult thing. Can be sometimes that silver lining is what we need to focus on, that maybe it didn't work out today, but maybe it will tomorrow. And even if it doesn't, maybe there's some other lesson there that I'm learning that I can apply in ways to help others or benefit me in some other aspect down the road. And that's really, in the end, what it was about. And that's something to maybe work on being okay with and learn from and accept and then move forward.
Well, I don't know if Corey Dropkin are going to win that curling match today, but they were guaranteed a silver. So that's that's another way to look at it, I think, for in our own lives, too. You know, all right,
yeah,
I've still got my job. I've still got, you know, I learned from what I did that didn't turn out well, and I'm going to apply myself in other ways to make that to make that break and make that improvement. Shyla, it's a pleasure talking with you today, all the way from Belize. I've been there, and it's a nice place. Let's put it that way. And you're in a good place, mentally, too. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Larry. Always a joy. Appreciate it.
Shyla Morgane, a psychologist at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, a sports psychologist to the UW Badger athletes. Up next, we're going to talk about how a UW improv class for students pursuing careers in healthcare can help them be better doctors. And Amy Zielinski is the instructor from UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and she will be our guest coming right up. I'm Larry Mueller.